Daddy, hurry!
Welcome to Mom Cave Live, where we may have lost our minds, but we haven't lost our sense of humor. I'm Jen, and I have a really fun guest that's not only fun, but informative for you today, and I hope you guys will take advantage of all of her expertise. This is Heidi Schuster. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me, Jen.
You are very welcome. Heidi sent me an email a while back, and it took us a while to connect because, oh my God, kids, schedules, school, life. Sports, life, right? But what caught my eye on Heidi's email was it said in the subject line, kids need to eat processed foods. And I was both thrilled, mystified, and I don't know. So I wanted to start there as a jumping off point. I always feel like my family doesn't eat healthy enough, but I love food so much and everything that I love is not that healthy. So that's how it is in our house. And I always feel guilty about that. Maybe you have a reason that will help the rest of us out there not feel so guilty. Why do kids need to eat processed foods, Heidi?
Well, first of all, unless you're like going into your backyard and growing all the grain and milking the cow, just about everything that we eat is processed.
True.
So there's this idea that like we should avoid processed food. A lot of it is really born from this sense that like there's a moral imperative around what we eat. I think we have to be careful about that. We have to be careful about it with ourselves as adults, but also particularly with kids. This idea that there are good foods and there are bad foods, I think can be really dangerous for young people because it sets up a system where they're really thinking about food in their mind as opposed to feeling it in their bodies and approaching eating with self-regulation instead of like this like more brain kind of way of thinking about food. So yeah, that's kind of where I'm coming from.
Yes. You and my husband would get along so well because whenever somebody says anything about processed foods, he goes on this like rant. He's like, everything's processed. If you pick this, it's processed. You put it in a box, it's processed. Of course, sometimes I think that's like our excuse for eating more processed foods in the
house. Well, I mean, I'm a big fan of like gardening, farming, like local, you know, supporting the local economy, supporting local farmers, taking care of our soils. I'm certainly the first person to like appreciate food in its like purest form, right?
Right.
But that said, life happens. We do need to eat. Convenience is there for a reason. It's certainly much better to put food on the table that's balanced and has been processed in some particular way, whether somebody helps you out and chops those vegetables or not, or you did it yourself, you're still serving, you know, good food to your family. So I just think this like demonizing of processed food can be insidious and like dangerous. It really gives this message that, again, some foods are good, some foods are bad. I'm really wanting kids to feel very neutral about food. And in terms of like how to do that, it's to like not give food those kinds of labels.
Okay.
Around kids so that they can like make choices from a more internal place of regulation as opposed to other people telling them what to eat or not eat, which they may or may not rebel against too.
Right. That's what I was thinking as you were saying that it's a little the reverse psychology thing with kids. Like if they know I really, really want them to eat broccoli, they don't want to eat broccoli. Like they.
Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And if you really want them to eat certain things, I mean, really don't want them to eat certain things, they may crave them as well. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that, like, I feel like when my kids are now in college So, but when my daughters were growing up, their friends who were from sugar-free households would always come over and like raid our cabinets because, you know, sugar was not off limits in my house. Whereas my kids really didn't have a lot of charge around those kinds of foods at all. So I do think there's something to be said for neutralizing and making food, just, you know, again, you know, not like a moralistic kind of piece around it.
Yeah. So say we are able to successfully neutralize all feelings about food in the household. How do we get them to eat the good ones? Well, I mean, you know.
Well, and it's so hard. Yeah, I know. See,
and we always do good, but it's supposed to be neutral. But yeah, you know what I mean.
I totally hear you. And I'm, you know, I'm a nutritionist. So, and I was sort of trained with nutrition science and I understand kind of how the body works. One of the things though, like when I went to nutrition school, that was many decades ago, that I thought was so useful to me at the time, partly because I was recovering from my own eating disorder, was that like all the food that we eat breaks down into these basic building blocks that our body can use. And it doesn't actually matter where you, whether you get it from pasta or bread or fruit or vegetable. Mm-hmm. All the carbohydrate that we eat breaks down to glucose and then our body uses it. Our cells use it. Mm-hmm. So there was something kind of comforting in learning about the actual science around nutrition.
Right.
And realizing that like, oh, you know, we actually don't have to be so particular about what we eat. Like our body can take care of that. And yes, we do get more vitamins and beautiful phytochemicals that are good for our health from things that are colorful, like vegetables, for example. But we also need nutrients that are in all the foods that are options to us. So diversity is really best for the body. Mm-hmm. And we're learning now as we learn more about the microbiome and our gut health, diversity is really important for our guts too. So I think that like, you're right. It's hard to like, to not have moral language, like of good or bad around mm-hmm. food, because that's sort of what, how we've been trained.
Yeah.
But I've been really working on untraining, to really not, you know, to really think about food much more neutrally, both so that we can prevent problems like disordered eating and binge eating, you know, kids can start to exhibit, teens can start to exhibit. That's my field of study, but also so that we can enjoy food. Like food is meant to be pleasurable. And mm-hmm. like broccoli's actually pretty yummy if you like put it with a nice sauce, especially, you know, that like enhances it, the flavor. So I think that like if we can approach food with excitement and enjoyment and like look how colorful it is and look how interesting this diverse plate is, then I think that we're gonna encourage that diversity in our kids eating more too.
Yeah, so much is in the preparation. And my mom will be watching this and knows how much I love her before I say this, and she knows this is true. I hated vegetables pretty much until adulthood because in our house, mostly it was like you took a can of green beans and you put them, you know, you heated them up and maybe my grandmother used to add a beef bouillon cube to her green beans. And that was thought of as high cuisine in our house. So, you know, when your vegetables are just like, blah, you're not going to love them. I got older and I started going to restaurants and things and you know, experiencing, oh my God, like you could have amazing green beans or Brussels sprouts or broccoli, depending on how they're prepared. And with my, especially my little one, she is in love with truffle salt. We put truffle salt on our vegetables and that's like, makes all the difference. So that's a good one. I love that you have your background in all of your accreditations and all of the research and the learning that you've done, but you've also had some personal experience in this whole field. So I was wondering if you could tell people, like, what are some of the signs you look for to detect disordered eating early in children? What might you see that would make you have a cause for concern?
Okay, no, it's a great question. I would be concerned about a child who seems very obsessed with food. And I don't mean like that they enjoy food, because food is meant to be a pleasure, but that they seem like very preoccupied with food, that they're talking about it all the time, you know, maybe even researching it all the time. Also, if a child or a teen shows evidence of hiding food, perhaps there's some shame around their eating, which would be useful to know about. So if there's like, you know, wrappers hidden and things like that, like it's worth asking about that. It might just be that they like to like hang out in their bed cave and with their book and have a snack, which is yeah. fine. But sometimes there's like shame in eating, like whether maybe they've been teased or something about their eating or their body. And so when they want to eat something yummy, they feel compelled to do it in secret. Yeah. So that could be a sign that maybe there's something going on in the relationship with food potentially, or that food is like being used as a soother, significantly. Like we all, eat emotionally. Like if we eat birthday cake, we eat emotionally, but if it seems like food is being used as a reward or a soother, a lot, that may be a learned behavior, perhaps from other family members, maybe, or peers, but something to sort of like, just, you know, watch. You know, show extra love and concern when you see someone's like relationship with food might be going a little off.
Yeah. And then if a parent is concerned, where do they go? Do they, is it the pediatrician? Who do you go to? Where do you start?
That's a really good question. And it like, there's no like right answer to that one. Unfortunately, there's like, I think if you're concerned that your child is either, you know, not fueling themselves well with food, or their relationship with food could be troubled. Certainly you could bring that up with the pediatrician. It's always good to get, a sense if there's like, if they're dropping off of their normal growth pattern, that's, you know, a little bit of an alert. You know, there are therapists, psychotherapists, and, you know, nutrition therapists like myself who specialize in working with kids and with disordered eating, that can be, consulted. Often if somebody's like under 12, like the child is under 12, the parents will just be, come in for a consultation, because it's sometimes you don't want to give too much attention to the food issue. But if it's if the child's over 12, then they might be worked with individually as well, since they're starting to make some of their own decisions about food and their autonomy is shifting in their adolescence. So there's definitely people available, but I would like look for, I'm gonna add this, insert this before you move on, which I would look for professionals who have a health at any size orientation, or a HAES, H-A-E-S orientation, which means that they are specifically oriented to not shaming individuals around their body, because some young people are just designed to be larger bodies than others. And I think we have to be really careful about weight stigma and healthcare. So I'll just put that out there.
Great. Yeah. And so that kind of segues into my last question for you. When you were just talking about autonomy, and as the kids get a little older, how much autonomy should we give younger children in what they have to eat or allowed to eat? How do we give them some autonomy, but make sure that they're healthy?
Yeah, super great question. It's such a hard one. And I have like a lot of compassion around this topic, because I, you know, raised two young women now as well. And I think I love Ellen Satter's division of responsibility. She says that the role of the parents is to make a diverse amount of healthy food available. And the role of the child is to eat it. So it's like pretty straightforward that when we start crossing into the lane of the child and start telling them what to eat or how much to eat or don't have that or do have that, then we're actually like crossing a boundary there. That ultimately our goal is to make good food available, to put it on the table, or if it's a young child, obviously on their plate. As they get older, I'm a big fan of having kids sort of self-select from what's on the table, like family style, as much as possible, so they can learn to self-regulate and kind of get connected to their appetite more. But in general, having things available is the parent's role or the caregiver's role, and eating is the kid's role. And the reality is, in like developing countries, like developed countries, I mean, that like mm-hmm. The kids don't starve.
Right.
Like if a child doesn't eat well at one meal, they're likely to make that up at the next meal or snack period.
Yes.
So we don't have to panic. It's better if we can be pretty chill at the mm-hmm. table and let them do some self-selecting of how much of the things to eat. It's always great to like make suggestions.
Yeah.
And say like, you know, it took me a long time to really like carrots too. Like maybe, you know, maybe let's give them a try again tonight. Mm-hmm. Pick your battles. Don't get into a huge battle with kids about it. Sometimes they need to try things. I think my intern, when we were doing research for my new book, we like looked at all the research, and she found that like it was somewhere between 13 and 30 times.
Yeah.
Need to try a food before they actually accept it.
That's a lot of times.
Some kids are more cautious than others just mm-hmm. naturally too. So, yeah. So like, you know, just exposure is really important.
Yeah,
I guess just touching it is important.
I get how it works for meals, because I'm a big like, well, this is what we're having for dinner. This, I don't like this. Well, this is what we're having for dinner. Like that I got. And like you said, I never worry. If they don't eat, then they'll eat more tomorrow. But mm-hmm. it's the snacks that get me, because when we're talking about what's available, like I want to have Doritos available in the house, right? Because I want to have those late at night when I'm watching TV. But if those are available in the house, my kids are never going to go and pick the banana to eat. So what do you do?
Yeah, I'm a big fan of having the bananas and the Doritos and like letting them select, you know, what they're into from time to time. And maybe sometimes the Doritos aren't available because they ran out and they try something different. Then they realize, oh, I really like this snack food better. But I'm a big fan of like, especially if it's something that you like to eat, like at some point someone will come downstairs and be like, mom's eating the Doritos. Why does she say I can't eat them?
I think
if you're going to have a food rule, you kind of mm-hmm. have to have it so the whole family follows
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing wrong. In fact, Doritos aren't like usually craved that much unless they're seen as being like a special thing that we only get once in a while. In general, food like loses its charge when it is more neutral.
That's a great way of thinking about it. I really appreciate that.
Heidi's
book is called Nurture, How to Raise Kids Who Love Food, Their Bodies, and Themselves. And if you go over to the comments, you can see the link of where to find it. You can also find Heidi on at Nourishing Words is your handle on all the places. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Nourishing
yep.
Words. Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing your nourishing words with me. I'm going to think of you as I go and prepare something healthy for lunch, and I'll save my Doritos for tonight. but I'll still eat them.
Enjoy.
Yes. Thank you so much. And if you all have any more questions for Heidi, you can feel free to put them in the comments, and this will be here for everybody to refer to. Good luck with the book. It's amazing. And thank you for talking with me.
Thank you so much, Jen. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. Thank you.